You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. For today's show, what I want to do is go over the Mets roster right now. The Mets are down to 39 players in camp, so I want to go over who's left, who's likely to make the roster. In the first segment, I'll kind of do an overview of, you know, everyone that's left and who's going to be in the rotation, the starting lineup, all that good stuff. Then in the second segment, I want to talk specifically about the bullpen because that's really the only place where there's still kind of a competition going in camp. And then finally, in the third segment, we'll switch gears and I want to preview Thursday's episode, and that's next Thursday for opening day. I had Brian Wright on, who is a Mets historian, has written some books about the Mets, and I'll play kind of the first little segment of that conversation with the rest coming next week. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. So let's start off with the news from Thursday, which is that Tommy Hunter was released. This is a pitcher the Mets signed to a minor league contract. He pitched 5 innings in spring, walked 4, gave up 2 runs, only had 3 strikeouts. And with that, the Mets announced they were down to 39 players in camp. Now, Noah Syndergaard does not count because he's already on the 60-day IL. Seth Lugo should start the year on the injured list. Likely gets back maybe a month into the season, so it won't be a 60-day assignment for him. Jose Martinez and Carlos Carrasco are likely to join Noah Syndergaard on the 60-day IL, which is significant because that would open up a spot in the 40-man roster for a player like maybe Mike Montgomery, who was signed on a minor league deal that seems to have a good chance to make the roster. If another injury popped up that wasn't as significant, and someone like Jose Peraza or Malik Smith needed to make the roster, you know, that would be a way to get them on the 40 as well. But with that, when you take Syndergaard out of consideration, he wasn't part of the 39. Lugo, Martinez, and Carrasco, you're down to 36 players vying for a spot on the 26-man roster. From there, I look at Colby Morris, who's a pitcher that was recently signed. Caleb Joseph, kind of a third catcher that was signed in the middle of camp. And even Jose Peraza, who I just mentioned, or Malik Smith, as all being likely cuts. For Peraza, he is kind of the last infielder standing, fighting for a spot on the roster that just isn't there. You look at the infielders, Lindor, Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, J.D. Davis, Luis Guillorme, and Jonathan Villar are all essential locks to make this roster, and that just does not leave room for a Peraza. For Malik Smith, very similar situation. If not for Jonathan Villar, I could have seen Smith making the roster as kind of a speedster that could be your pinch runner off the bench. But VR kind of does that already. And so for Malik Smith, who's not on the 40, I just don't see him starting the season with the, you know, big league club. Instead, probably start the season in Syracuse. And with that, that drops us to 32 players. So let's dig in here. I already addressed the infielders. That puts your roster at 6. James McCann and Tomas Nito brings it up to 8 as your 2 catchers. Your starting rotation after the Yamamoto decision seems to be pretty set in stone with Jacob deGrom, Marcus Stroman, Taijuan Walker, David Peterson, and Joey Lucchesi. That will get us halfway there with 13 of the 26 spots taken. You add in 5 outfielders with Dominic Smith, Brandon Nimmo, Michael Conforto, Kevin Pillar, and Albert Amora Jr., and you are left with 8 spots for your bullpen. And the one thing I will say, and I've mentioned this in the past, there is an off chance that Albert Amor, who still has some options left, could start the season in AAA if the Mets just really wanted to have an extra arm in the bullpen at the beginning of the year as they continue to get those starters ramped up to full speed. Most of them seem to be on schedule anyway, so I don't know why you would necessarily need to do that. But if the Mets wanted some more pitching, there is a world where Albert Amor starts the season out in AAA and you roll out a four-man bench. But I think that this Mets team really should lean into that deep bench that they could have. That frees up someone like Jonathan Villar to be a pinch runner in a spot. That frees up the ability to, you know, really utilize your pinch hitters when, you know, J.D. Davis or Dominic Smith is not starting, to be able to have those guys come off the bench at a big spot at any time. And even in some instances come in for a pinch hitting opportunity. And let's just say, you know, J.D. Davis wasn't starting. Maybe Jonathan Villar was. But you get a spot where you want him to come in against a lefty. Davis gets a big knock. You take a late lead. You had that deep bench to also all of a sudden make another substitution next inning and put Luis Guillorme in for defense. So I just think the bigger bench makes more sense with this team. And that leaves us with the bullpen. And that's what we're going to talk about more in the next segment here, because there is definitely a competition for the final spots. And I would say for now there's five absolute locks. You have Edwin Diaz, Trevor May, Miguel Castro, Jeurys Familia, and Aaron Loop. Dellin Betances is a little bit more on the bubble. It appears like he is a lock, but I do want to talk about Betances' situation a bit, because I do think there is a scenario where the Mets might try to make a move there, whether it's starting him on the injured list or just outright releasing him. I'll talk about that a bit more. And the guys I think who are really kind of the front runners to round out the Mets bullpen in just a minute. But BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football's over, but you have the NBA, college basketball, the March Madness still in full swing right now, and even the NHL. This is a great time for sports, especially with opening day around the corner. BetOnline covers awards, TV shows, even reality TV, with real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Hosted by Peter Bukowski, Locked On Today is a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes by subscribing to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts. So let's really talk about the Mets bullpen now. I already mentioned the locks. You got Edwin Diaz, Trevor May, Miguel Castro, Jeurys Familia, and Aaron Loop. I believe all of them will be there. So let's talk about the guys in the bubble. And the first one I already started to talk about is Dellin Betances. He has yet to look like that same guy he was with the Yankees, a four-time All-Star who is one of the best setup men in baseball year after year, at a time where he still had, you know, 98 in his back pocket, that knuckle curve. He was just a dynamic reliever. Has the injuries in 2019. First, it was the shoulder, if I'm not mistaken. Then it was his Achilles that ruptured. And he just had, you know, terrible luck that year. Hits free agency right after the injuries. The Mets signed to that incentive-laden contract with that option that he ultimately picked up and is on right now. And now the Mets are looking at this guy who just does not seem to have it anymore. He's 33 years old. He does still have that pedigree to fall back on. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he gets a couple more ticks on that fastball. But right now, it is still sitting between 89 and 92, 93 at most. He's not consistently even throwing 93 miles per hour, which if he can get to that and he can really work off that knuckle curve and everything else that he has, maybe there's still some hope for Dellin Betances. He's still a big guy that, you know, comes from an arm angle that is tough to for hitters to really be able to pick up on when he's going right, when he's locating his pitches. I think he can get by with some deception, but we haven't seen it at this point. And when you're talking about all the arms the Mets could use instead of Betances, you have to really think long and hard about how long you keep him on the roster. With that being said, I look at the Mets regime of the past, and sometimes they were too haste at making these decisions. Travis d'Arnaud is kind of the first example from, you know, recent years that comes to mind. They, you know, tender him a contract after Tommy John surgery. He wins the job out of camp, you know, gets, what, 9 games on the active roster, and then is DFA'd. You look at, you know, that situation, and it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, obviously, position player versus pitcher, but the fact that the Mets were impatient is something that I think can be looked at now, and maybe taking a little bit more of a calm approach here would be a wise move with Betances. They can start the year, have him as your 8th guy in the bullpen, have him pitch in low-leverage spots, build up his confidence, you know, have him come into games where the Mets have a huge lead, where the Mets are losing by a lot of runs, you know? Don't have him come in spots where there's runners already on base, no inherited runners in traffic, or things that he has to work on where, you know, he comes into a spot where things can really go sideways for him. Instead, put him in good positions, and maybe he kind of works himself into a nice little role for the Mets. Or, the other option, you place him on the IL to start the season. You have him work through some of the, you know, questions with the velocity and his health, and maybe he gets to a point at the alternate site where eventually you pull him off the IL and he can be effective. Or if he's just showing nothing at the alternate site, you can then make the decision to cut bait and just kind of swallow that contract. But for now, Luis Rojas has kind of said that his spot is not in jeopardy. So it appears like he will be there, and that leaves you with 2 spots remaining. Drew Smith is one of the options, and I'll kind of go through all of them again. You have Drew Smith, who is on the 40, but has 2 minor league options. Steven Tarpley, also on the 40, with 2 minor league options. And Robert Gazelman, in that same boat as well, on the 40, with the 2 minor league options. You have Jerry Blevins. You have Jared Eichhoff. You have Mike Montgomery. And Arodis Vizcaíno, all on minor league contracts. They all signed this offseason to minor league deals with the, you know, roster invite, or the non-roster invite, I should say, to spring training. And you look at these options here, and I think Jared Eichhoff is the most obvious one that you could say who will not be part of this ball club. He is a starting pitcher. Unless they want to use him as the long man out of the bullpen, I just don't see it for Eichhoff. You go down the list there, and those 3 guys that have the 2 minor league options are the easiest guys to retain. You keep them on the 40, you send them to Syracuse. Robert Gazelman obviously has the pedigree that would suggest that he would make this team, just because he has made this team basically ever since his debut in 2016. He's been part of this Mets bullpen, or even the rotation at times. But you look at what he's done recently, and I think starting the season in Syracuse isn't the worst thing for Gazelman. He, you know, is kind of past the point in his career where he's developing, but you send him down and he's kind of the first guy to come up, and I think he'll get a lot more work in AAA than he will on the major league roster, and that'll keep him sharp for when you have to go to him. If he's pitching great, he's pitching lights out, and some of the guys that you choose to kind of break camp in that bullpen aren't, he's a good option with a lot of experience that you can turn to. Now, Drew Smith is actually dealing with shoulder soreness right now, so he might start the season on the injured list rather than getting that initial option down to the minors. Steven Tarpley, you know, has an outside shot to make the team, but again, with those options, I think it makes a lot of sense to start him out in Syracuse, and that leaves you with Jerry Blevins, Arodis Fiskayenu, Mike Montgomery, and Jacob Barnes. I think Barnes has maybe an inside track to make this team because he has no options remaining. So if the Mets were to decide that he does not belong on the big league roster, they would have to DFA him. He'd have to pass through waivers before being allowed to, you know, accept a minor league assignment with the Mets. I think you see what he's done in spring, and he gave up 3 runs his first outing, but has pitched 4 scoreless innings since with 6 strikeouts. It makes a lot of sense to include him in that bullpen, at least at the start of the year. And if it doesn't work out, then you DFA him then. You go to the other guys that are on minor league deals and signed with those non-roster invites. And, you know, Blevins, obviously the Mets fans know a lot about him, but he's 37 years old. Don't know what's left in the tank. Vizcaíno, you know, might be a guy that could potentially push Barnes off of that 40 if they really like what they've seen, but he's only pitched 1 inning in spring thus far. He did show plus velocity again, so definitely got to watch, but they could also, you know, ultimately stash him in Syracuse at the start of the season. And that leaves us with Mike Montgomery, who I believe will be that 8th guy in the bullpen. He is a swing man who has experience in that role with the Chicago Cubs on good teams, where he could be your spot starter. Some days he can come in and mop up duty and give you 3 or 4 innings. He is a left-handed pitcher, so good to add another one of those to your bullpen. And he also has that option, or that opt-out, in his contract on March 28th, where you can kind of look around and see if there's another team that will include him on the big league roster if the Mets do not do that instead. So I look at Montgomery. Do you want to lose him? Probably not. I kind of feel like the Jordan Yamamoto, you know, option to AAA was partially led by getting Montgomery kind of that inside track. If Joey Lucchese was going to be the swing man, now Lucchese's in the rotation, so now Montgomery can be that swing man. And ultimately, I do believe it will be him and Jacob Barnes that round out that bullpen. Now for the final segment, I'm going to kind of preview next Thursday's opening day special episode, where I had Brian Wright come on, a Mets historian, as we talk about the Mets' storied history on opening day. This is kind of the first little segment of that much larger conversation, and I'll have that for you in just a minute. But right now, it is Built Bar Madness. We've been telling you about Built Bar for some time because it's the best tasting protein bar on the market. Built Bars come low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, and high in fiber. They taste amazing and all come covered in 100% chocolate. And right now, there is a tournament going on for Built Bar to see which Built Bar is best. Today's matchup is Cookie Dough Chunk versus Birthday Cake. Tough matchup there. I actually just tried the birthday cake today. It's a nice flavor. I still got to give the edge to Cookie Dough Chunk. If you agree with me, go to BuiltBar.com or to Built_Bar on Twitter to vote on your favorite. And remember to use the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar. All right, longtime Locked On Mets fans will know this guest. He helped us out a lot during those sports shutdown times. Brian Wright came on to talk about his book for our quarantine book club. Thank you so much for coming back on.
Hey, Ryan. It is great to be on again.
And I'll tell you, so Brian Wright is kind of like our Mets historian over at Mets Merize. You know, when you write a couple books about the Mets, you definitely qualify for that term. So if I'm going to talk about opening day, I'm glad that you are here with me to go through the Mets history, because it is a very special history with opening day. And I want to start with the beginning. The Mets lost 9 of their first 10 opening days. Was that just simply a terrible startup franchise losing a bunch of games? That was just what the Mets were back then, right?
Yeah, it doesn't help that they were not a good team. If they were a good team, you could just say, well, it's bad luck. And interestingly enough, they won a World Series before they won an opening day game. They didn't win their first opening day until, what was it, 1970. In 1969, they actually lost to the Expos in their very first game. The fact that they weren't a good team lowered the expectations that they could win any game, much less, the first game of the season. But, after that, they've been, it's how many they won out of, it's amazing how many they have won and that they have the best winning percentage in opening day, despite losing what the first seven opening days or eight opening days.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then from there, I think it was 1971 is when I saw it was the turning point. They win 12 of their next 13. And I was thinking, wait, was that when Seaver started having the opening day? Nah, and it was actually before that. Obviously, 69, they won it all. He was the opening day starter. But is that kind of what changed? You start to have guys like Seaver starting those opening days and the Mets get better as they get into the 70s?
Yeah, it definitely helps. Just like it doesn't help that you're not a particularly good team to start a season. That certainly doesn't help your chances for winning opening days or any days. But when you have Tom Seaver, it really enhances your chances to win, even if you're facing the other team's best pitcher. I think there are multiple times in which the Mets played the Phillies an opening day, and it usually meant an encounter with Steve Carlton. More often than not, Seaver had the upper hand. But other than that, there's no really good explanation for why the Mets have a good opening day record. It's something we cling to, and there's really no rhyme or reason for it.
I'll tell you, for me, I almost kind of want them to lose on opening day because there's been so many seasons where the Mets have this opening day where everything from the offseason just works, right? Even like last year, right? Cespedes. I mean, that was Cespedes' only moment, and then it all fell apart. So it's like, at a certain point, I almost wonder, let's change up the way Mets history has gone. And maybe if you lose on opening day, you'll win at the end of the season.
Could be a year like 69, where you lose the first game and then it ends in the World Championship. And yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing about last season after that long delay that everyone had, winning that game 1-0 on the Cespedes home run. You go, oh my gosh, we have a healthy Yoenis Cespedes. About a week later, or just over a week later, he's no longer on the team.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So what I want to do now is I want to go through some of the big opening days in Mets history. I actually found an article from Anthony DiComo where he had his top five. I thought a couple of them were interesting. One of them was 1983. Seaver returns to the Mets and is the Mets opening day starter. I got to imagine fans were going a little bit nuts on that particular opening day.
Yeah, I think if there was ever one opening day that I could go back in time, even before I was born, and be there, it would be this game because it was Tom Seaver returning after, what, almost 6 years after the Midnight Massacre, after being traded to the Reds for four players that certainly couldn't measure up to his stature. He came back in another trade from the Reds to the Mets. And this just dripped with nostalgia. It was a perfect day. If you ever get to watch the game on YouTube, it's a beautiful day. It's against the Phillies and against Steve Carlton, a guy he met a lot of times on opening day. And just to watch that, there was this great big banner in, I think it was the left field, near the left field corner. It said, "Welcome home, Tom." And the first batter he faces is Pete Rose, strikes him out. I mean, Shea Stadium is electric. And, similar to someone like a Met of current day, he pitches six shutout innings. Unfortunately, the Mets can't score. He pitches great, but he can't get the victory. But the Mets did eventually win. People will debate usually one I know you're going to get to, or this game, 1983, is the best opening day the Mets have ever had. It's one of the best, just days the Mets ever had as far as regular season games. It's unfortunate Tom Seaver had to was let go in a sense at the end of the season. That's another mistake that Mets management made. But to have him back in a Mets uniform, I mean, it just electrified the crowd.
Yeah, and then I think the game you're probably referencing is 85, correct?
Yes, that to me, I think that is the best opening day in Mets history. It's tough. I think in Mets and Tens, I know I ranked him, and I think I had this number one. I have to go back and look. But yeah, this 1985 game, I say I'd rather be at the 83 because 1985, if you watch that one, I think it was like 35 degrees. Like,
wow.
Cold, windy. Dwight Gooden started after that incredible 84 season, got the opening day nod. You could tell he was not able to grip the ball very well. I mean, he had an okay day, but he just was not as effective. But the big debut on that day, I mean, Tom Seaver re-debuting in 83. This was a debut for Gary Carter, having come over in a surprise trade with the Expos. But after that 84 season where the Mets won 90 games, I mean, expectations were through the roof when Carter comes in, because as everyone knows, that was like the last piece of the championship puzzle. Turned out to be true. Going to 85 season, I think it was as highly anticipated as any Met season ever. And Carter, you know, it ends with Carter hitting the walk-off homer against Neil Allen, a former Met in the Keith Hernandez trade, it should be known. But hitting that homer on the 10th inning in left field, fans chanting, Gary, Gary. And it was wonderful ending. It turns out the game, Gary's game was not so great. He got hit by a pitch by Joaquin Andujar, allowed Andujar to steal a base. I think he had a pass ball. He had, I think, two strikeouts. He did hit a double, but up until the 10th inning, it was not an impressive debut for Gary Carter. Wound up being a fantastic ending and a season for him. And everyone remembers the home run, but leading up to it, it was a little bit shaky, but he made good on it. It turned out to be kind of a microcosm of the season because Gary got really beat up throughout the year. As most catchers do, but he had an especially tough year physically. But at the plate, it was his best season, and especially at the end of the year, he was their best player. So again, microcosm of the season. But 85 to me is, I would say, slight edge as far as the best opening day ever.
And it's kind of interesting when you talk about that game in particular, the way that Carter kind of had the ups and downs, and I think that really speaks to what opening day is about. There, especially a year like this year, I mean, we have so much excitement, and you just have everyone kind of wondering, you know, what's this guy going to look like? So for in that case, what's Carter going to look like in a Mets uniform now? What's Lindor going to look like? We've seen it, but not in a regular season game. And I just imagine those fans, you know, coming up into the 10th inning, looking over like, we traded all this for Gary Carter. You know, is this guy really that good? And then he hits a home run and everyone's chanting his name and it completely has a 180 shift. And that's just kind of the beauty of baseball.
Yeah, it's funny how those, it's not funny, but I mean, it's expected how these games, the opening day games, kind of are looked at in a vacuum. And we kind of forget the fact that it's one of 162 and that you kind of generate, you know, impressions a little too, you know, strong from just one game. And it's just that, it's just one game. It's obviously a big one. And, you know, and in the sense of, more times than not, hopefully it's a year of high expectations, and this one's going to be especially so. So if Francisco Lindor goes, you know, 0-for-4, not go crazy.
That's going to be all for today's edition of Locked on Mets. As I said, the remainder of that conversation will be played on opening day. Got a busy week next week. Going to kick things off with my starting pitching power rankings and previews for the National League East. We'll have our final Division Day crossover with Locked On Phillies, have that opening day show, and much more ahead. So make sure you subscribe, you rate and review the podcast, and you can listen wherever you get your podcast. Also, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan and follow the show at Locked On Mets. And the Locked On MLB Division Preview Series will continue on Locked On MLB today. Every episode from now until March 31st features in-depth looks at each team in every division. It's all on the Locked On MLB podcast feed right now, so follow Locked On MLB on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts.